You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
The dots. I am your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with a special guest, my friend Devin Rose. Devin, I met Devin a couple of years ago down in
Los Alamos.
Down in Los Alamos. I was blanking on the name. You know, it was the exposure to radiation that did it. That's why I couldn't remember. But I was in Los Alamos, New Mexico, which is a really interesting place. That's grist for another time, another story. But anyway, had lunch with Devin. Devin is an interesting guy. He grew up an atheist, converted to evangelical Protestantism during college after suffering from a social anxiety disorder and panic attacks and depression. God uses all kinds of stuff to get through to us. And anyway, he started researching the roots of his Protestant beliefs and discovered Newman's principle that to be deep in history is to cease to be a Protestant, and entered the church in 2001. Was that at Easter that you entered the church?
It was Easter in College Station, Texas. Okay. At St. Mary's, and one of the key books in my conversion was By What Authority? An Evangelical Discovers Sacred Tradition.
Well, how about that? Thanks be to God. I'm glad it was of service. By the way, I'm just finishing your introduction so people get a chance to know a little bit about you. You work as a full-time software developer, but your big passion is defending the Catholic faith, helping Protestants discover the church as well. And so in 2013, he wrote The Protestant's Dilemma, which you can find at Amazon. Is there another place to get The Protestant's? Can people get it from you directly?
No, it is a Catholic Answers book, so you can get it from Catholic.com.
Okay, get it from Catholic.com, go to Amazon. Easy to find Catholic Answers books on Amazon or wherever, or just at Catholic.com. In 2016, you just published Navigating the Tiber, a guidebook for how Catholics can lead their Protestant friends into communion with the church. And Devin's a devoted husband and father, and now is living no longer in New Mexico, but in Central Texas. Welcome to Connecting the Dots, Devin. It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, you too, Mark. It's, you know, back in the day, I never would have thought I would get to chat with Mark Shea, let alone multiple times, you know, over the past years. So, yeah, I'm glad to be here and to chit chat.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're one of my favorite people. I had a wonderful time when I saw you down in New Mexico, and I saw you in Convinced, the film that came out last year. I tell people we were in a movie that Don Johnson made, and everybody immediately thinks of Miami Vice.
Yeah, and Don's just old enough to where he was named, you know, before that series that came out in the 80s, you know, and just the breaks, the way it works.
Yeah, that's how it goes. So That was cool. You know, we went to see the screening of that. They played it at a local theater here in Seattle. So we came to the screening. It was like, it's really weird to see your face up on this giant screen, you know, and the faces of other people.
They did a screening here too, and I went to it, and it was strange, you know, because it was, and it's these people who I've interacted with, like, you know, you, and then you know, Jen Fulweiler lives right here, actually in my own town.
Well, does she?
She does. So she's, you know, she's local, but just seeing these people, I'm like, hey, I, you know, I've talked with that person, and I was quite happy about the documentary that, you know, Don made it in, as a Protestant becoming Catholic, basically.
Yeah, I thought it was good too. It was. I'd never done anything like that before. They, you know, they came out and they sit you down in a chair out in your backyard, and you talk to them for a couple of hours, and then they take the film and they chop it up into little segments and stitch them all together, and voila. So yeah, well, I thought your part was great, and then this book came out. Navigating the Tiber came out, and it just seemed like, well, this, you know, why have a radio show if I can't have people on that I like and like talking to? So here you are.
Well, thank you, Mark.
So talk a little bit about your journey into the church.
Sure. Yeah. I grew up atheist. And had, you know, no reason to believe in Christianity or anything at all. As you mentioned, through social anxiety disorder, panic attacks, and depression in college, that brought me down to my knees, mm-hmm. where I was willing to give God a chance. Mm-hmm. And God came through, and He started helping. And it was, I knew that it was God because I had ruled out psychosomatic placebo possibilities, and mm-hmm. I had tried all the self-help books on my own, Mind Over Matter and all that. None of that worked.
Yeah.
There in college, I had, even as an atheist, made some Christian friends, most of whom were evangelical Protestants.
Mm-hmm. So
that's why I then, from atheism, became an evangelical Protestant. They were the ones who welcomed me in, gave me an NIV study Bible. Took me to church. I was listening to their pastor, just absorbing like a sponge everything he said about what the Bible meant.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, my life was changing. Complete 180 turnaround and on so many different moral issues, and the Holy Spirit was working. I was baptized in the Southern Baptist Church.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one single practicing Catholic friend.
So okay.
I had lots of Catholic friends who were living their life just like I was, as if they didn't believe in anything.
Right.
He was thrilled that I had become a Christian from atheism, because we used to discuss faith and why I didn't believe even as an atheist, but he was less excited about me now becoming an anti-Catholic Protestant. And so he started throwing out some challenges, questions, roadblocks, and it was actually those questions that led me. I wanted to prove him wrong, and it led me to two things. One was a cassette tape. I'm not as old as you, Mark, but I'm getting up there.
Well, at least it wasn't an 8-track.
It was not an 8-track, but it was a cassette tape, and it was Scott Hahn's conversion story. And then the second one was Mark Shea's By What Authority.
Hmm. Okay.
And as I read By What Authority, as I read that book, my mind physically hurt. It trying to unravel and get to the bottom of how I could accept the books of the Bible that were in my Protestant Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And you go through this thought process very meticulously, and you ultimately find out that the thing is hanging from nothing, right? Mm-hmm. In other words, mm-hmm. that there's no basis for you as a Protestant to accept this particular set of books and think it's the only infallible rule of faith.
Right.
That was a key point for me.
Okay.
That led me to the Catholic Church.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm so happy to hear that. I didn't know this. Well, thanks be to God. That's good to hear. That's why I wrote the book for you.
So. and the other million people who've bought it, huh? I know this one's sold a million copies, Mark. It's a bestseller.
It's been around for a while. Yeah, I'm happy to. That it's done its job. So, that's okay. Well, continue.
Well,
didn't mean to get sidetracked.
Well, first of all, I'll briefly fast forward, but, navigating the Tiber, this, this book that I wrote, it, you know, by what authority in your book, you trace out the path that led you from evangelical Protestantism to come to realize the need for sacred tradition and believe in the Catholic Church. That was your path across the Tiber River. And I think that it was a particularly helpful, instructive path for others. And that's essentially what I codified in a general way in Navigating the Tiber is that bouncing, searching, you know, three steps forward, two steps back type of journey that you went on and most of us had to. What if there was a way for you as a Catholic to help lead your Protestant friend along that journey in a way that, you know, speeds it up, that helps them get over potentially, you know, showstopper obstacles and to bring it back to the discussion of fundamental matters like the canon of Scripture. And just to jump to another thing that, of how this affects, and maybe we'll get to it later, there was recently a debate between Trent Horn of Catholic Answers and James White, Protestant preacher familiar with. Well, and they discussed, can a Christian lose his salvation? Well, that's a leaf issue, and you don't really get anywhere in a debate like that because there's all these other fundamental topics that you don't agree on that ultimately go back to the canon script.
Well, and we'll continue talking about that when we return. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with author Devin Rose, author of Navigating the Tiber. And we'll be right back on Breadbox Media right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we're here today talking with Devin Rose. He's the author of The Protestant's Dilemma and also of Navigating the Tiber, and he is himself a convert to the faith, something I can certainly empathize with as a convert my own self. And if you want to join the conversation, you're out there in Radio Land, you're champing at the bit, you really want to talk to Devin Rose, here we are. You can just give us a call at 1-573-4-BREAD-4. 1-573-4-BREAD-4. You can also tweet us at Breadbox Media. So your new book, Navigating the Tiber, it's out from Catholic Answers. It's about how you lead your Protestant friends and family into the Catholic Church, having already blazed that trail yourself. How do you start that process?
Well, you know, for someone like you and me, it comes naturally because we were Protestant. So we understand where Protestant comes from. We understand at least a good bit of the landscape of Protestantism. But many Catholics, especially cradle Catholics, don't. So this book says, hey, right from the beginning, let's survey the landscape of Protestantism for general background. And we're going to kind of bend Protestants into a few different groups so that when you're talking to someone, you can at least place them generally. So every Protestant has their unique beliefs. But at least generally, where does this person fit? And then we jump into the fundamental issues. Protestants, of course, believe sola scriptura, Bible alone is the sole infallible rule of faith. So we look at the scriptura part first and say, let's investigate the canon of Scripture.
Right.
And actually the recommended reading at the end of that chapter, at the end of each chapter, I have a recommended reading for people to go deeper. And one of the books is actually By What Authority, because of how it goes into the canon.
Oh, okay.
So then let's look at the canon, and you're going to continually want to come back to the canon in your discussion. Mm-hmm. Because of how well it ferrets out the authority question.
Mm-hmm.
But then let's look at the solo part, right? Why the Bible alone? You know, mm-hmm. where is that said? And it goes on from there to often it follows one path through an ongoing dialogue that I've had many times with different Protestants, where the discussion often bounces then to something like the perspicuity of the scriptures, right? Which, as you mm-hmm. know, is an essential corollary to sola scriptura for Protestants, right? That the scriptures have to be clear enough that a reasonably intelligent Christian can pick them up and read them in the essential parts.
One of the, your mention of the word perspicuity. Perspicuity, for those of you who don't know, simply means clarity. It's just kind of a longer $3 word for clarity. Perspicuousness is clarity. And one of the funniest arguments I ever witnessed on the internet was an argument that went on, I think, for about 3 days on Steve Ray's bulletin board. His Catholic Converts website had like this discussion board for people to have, you know, long chats and discussions. And I watched this argument that proceeded for about 3 days between a dedicated Calvinist and a Catholic friend of mine named Gary Hoag. And the entire thing centered around trying to pin down the exact meaning of the word perspicuous. And it was just one of the most hilariously ironic arguments I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, that is the definition of irony.
So anyway, go ahead.
Well, and that's you know, it's funny because that is exactly what happens when you're in a discussion with a Protestant. Inevitably, the discussion turns to the scripture themselves, and they want to quote passages. And you start to discuss and go back and forth with them. And they're saying both, here's what the scriptures mean, and it's very clear that it means this. So mm-hmm. not just this is what it means, but it also is clear. And the mm-hmm. fact that you as a Catholic, or even you as a fellow Protestant whom they disagree with, are not able to see how clear it is.
Mm-hmm.
Shows there's something wrong with you. Either you're not listening to the Holy Spirit, or you're ignorant because you haven't studied, or you're malicious.
Right.
There's no other possibility, because the only other possibility is that the scriptures are not as clear as Protestants need them to be for sola scriptura to be true.
Yeah.
And yep. But you know, as you know, with discussions with Protestants, this is the path that's followed. They want to get onto familiar turf, which for them is pulling out their Bible and starting to quote passages that they think are slam dunks for Protestant beliefs like sola fide, justification through faith alone.
Mm-hmm.
So in the book, then we get to that. We say, okay, they're pulling out the Bible. They want to talk about faith alone. They want to talk about how they think baptism is only symbolic, and they reject the Catholic belief in baptismal regeneration. Here's how you go toe-to-toe with them on such a question. And now, let's say with the question of baptism, it could also be the Eucharist or any other topic, as you know. Mm-hmm. Let's pull out our ace in the hole, the Church Fathers,
mm-hmm.
and what the early Christians wrote about baptism or the Eucharist or, you know, the priesthood or the Mass. And inevitably, of course, it sounds much more Catholic reading those early Christians than it does Protestant.
So this yeah. is, oh, yeah, absolutely it does. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, and I just got done reading Rod Bennett's The Apostasy That Wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he's got the Four Witnesses as well.
Mm-hmm.
The Church Fathers are just, man, they are, as I call them, an ace in the hole. in discussing these things, because how on earth did these early Christians go off the rails so quickly on these essential doctrines?
Exactly. Yeah, it's the... I remember talking to a friend of mine once, you know, and just saying that what we're asked to believe, and this is, you know, one of the great ironies, of course, is that this is exactly the same argument that's made by Mormons against Protestants. Everything went off the rails. We and we alone have recovered the true essence of the early church. Anybody can do that at any time. And point to any period in history and say, that's not real. That's, you know, and now I'm restoring it. And that was the attempt that was made in the Reformation, too. And it's been the attempt that happens every sort of successive, you know, Protestant generation since then. You know, so you wound up, you know, for example, you know, the Puritans weren't revolting against the Catholic Church. They were revolting against the Anglican Church that they said was too much like the Catholic Church. And Mormonism essentially does that a couple centuries later, and it does it on American soil and says, you know, all those, everybody else, you know, is a corruption and a snare and a deception and so forth. And now we're restoring the truth. And in order to achieve that, they sort of took the next step and said, we're not just going to interpret the Bible differently. We're going to produce an entirely new set of sacred scriptures and add them, you know.
Right. Yeah. And that's what you just described is, I think, a key point for in discussing the faith of Protestants. And that's the Catholic Church claims that there's an unbroken continuity. In other words, that apostasy never happened.
Right.
That total corruption never happened.
Right.
Because God disallowed it. And so becoming Catholic is actually a step forward in faith, accepting all that God has revealed and done. It's not a step backward. It's actually believing that God is even more benevolent and wise and wonderful by giving us his church, making it so that she is impregnable, you know, indefectible, infallible, so that we can know the truth and be set free by it. Otherwise, if Protestantism were true, what you're left with is uncertainty with regard to what the content of divine revelation is.
Yeah. Yeah. And about major things, I mean, really crucial things, such as, you know, the underpinnings of your own faith. You don't know, and you can't know, which books really belong in the Bible. So
right.
Anyway.
So sola scriptura is true, right? You have to know which books belong in the Bible. And that's one of the pillars of the entire Reformation.
Yeah.
So you've undercut the whole experiment right there. And whenever Protestants do want to discuss a topic, often it is a leaf topic, like something about Mary, or can a Christian lose their salvation, or, you know, why did Catholics gamble and drink alcohol? And you got to go back to the more fundamental issues to get to the root of the divisions.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we will return to this in just a moment. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Mr. Devin Rose talking about his books, Navigating the Tiber and The Protestant's Dilemma. And we'll be right back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Devin Rose, and we are talking about, well, we're talking about both of his books, really, The Protestant's Dilemma, and also Navigating the Tiber. And I'm sorry, you were saying before the break, go ahead.
Well, you actually brought up about the whole kind of reinventing Christianity every generation.
Right.
That's happened in Protestantism, beginning with the Reformation and then even into the Restoration, quote unquote, movement that gave us Mormonism and the Churches of Christ and Jehovah's Witnesses and all those people.
And now we're up to the emergent church.
Yeah. Yes.
Which in some ways presents some opportunities to Catholics, because kind of the mark of the emergent church, this is a phenomenon in evangelical circles. Catholics are usually not tuned into this sort of stuff because it's not happening in the Catholic Church, but in evangelical circles, the rising generation has done what rising generations have done since time immemorial and looked at their parents and said, whatever it is they like, we're against, and whatever they're against, we're going to check it out and see if maybe there's something to it. And so the interesting thing is you've got a rising generation of evangelicals who, on the one hand, don't have any real issues. A lot of times don't have any big issues with abortion or gay marriage or the sorts of things that their parents' generation, which is to say my generation, cared about. But on the other hand, they're really interested in things like Marian devotion and the rosary, because that was all forbidden fruit. Because it looked too
yes.
Catholic. And I should say that it's more things like gay marriage than abortion. The younger generation is surprisingly open to a pro-life ethic because they know that they themselves are survivors, that they could have been killed and they weren't. And so they're willing to listen to the pro-life message. Not particularly interested in the gay marriage issue. That's not a big thing for them. But what's fascinating is to hear them listen with real interest to Catholics talking about things like sacramentality, talking about devotion to the Blessed Virgin, because all of these things drive their parents crazy.
Yeah. And, you know, here in, you know, you're kind of in a hotbed area for that. And so am I. I'm in the Austin area. Mm-hmm. And we probably have about 30 or 40 hipster/emergent Protestant churches. And, you know, one friend of mine actually ended up becoming Catholic. He returned to the Catholic Church from an emergent Protestant church. And
really?
That emergent church, yeah, they actually had adopted the Anglican Book of Common Prayer and a lot of the Anglican liturgy. And they would do it in their, you know, warehouse. Well,
isn't
a lot.
That interesting?
Yeah. And like you're saying, because what was, foreboding to their parents, they're like, well, this is kind of neat.
Yeah.
And they're not wrong. No, they're not. And he kind of followed it to the conclusion and said, well, where did this come from? Oh yeah, this came from the Catholic liturgy.
Right.
Why aren't I Catholic?
Right. It's a good question.
Yeah. And so, you know, he, like you're saying, the emergent kind of hipster movement that we see with evangelical Protestants is leading a lot of them to the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
And they're one of the groups I mention in Navigating the Tiber when I survey the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
Because some, you know, depending on where you live, some Catholics are never going to meet one of these people. But you might, and they're growing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even mainline Protestant churches around here. Many of them have rebranded themselves with new names that don't have the denominational affiliation in it.
Okay.
In order to attract that type of evangelical, the young people who are not interested in denominational, mm-hmm. Names.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care about Methodist and Lutheran. But if you name the church Providence or Mosaic, then they're like, well, I'll check that out. That sounds kind of interesting.
Interesting. I think I suspect that that's more something you meet in the South than you would where I come from. Although Austin is sort of the Seattle of Texas.
Yeah, y'all have got Mars Hill, various Mars Hills.
Well, we did. Yeah, that's true. Although Mars Hill fell on hard times when Mark Driscoll imploded, because it was, in many ways, it was kind of a cult of personality. And that's, you know, that's one of the dangers that you face, particularly in the world of non-denom Protestantism, is you do get cults of personality that just sort of center around the pastor and his thing.
That actually leads right back into in Navigating the Tiber. I have the person examine, where do your beliefs come from? And right. As a Protestant, when you trace those back, you end up hitting one of the Protestant reformers typically.
Mm-hmm.
So this cult of personality began with Martin Luther and John Calvin and Zwingli. And you're often able, as a Protestant, to say, where did the symbolic idea of the Eucharist come about?
Mm-hmm.
Where did the idea that we should be iconoclasts and not have stained glass windows or frescoes come about?
Mm-hmm.
Or symbolic baptism, rejection of the other sacraments, justification through faith alone, all these things. And when you trace that back, you realize, oh, these weren't around for 2,000 years. They sprung about 500 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it originated with one of the Protestants who, of course, even disagreed with one another, couldn't convince one another. And so they went their separate ways and right. set the pattern for the splits that have happened since.
Right. Yeah, and it's curious because there are often sort of splits within the mind of a particular evangelical. So my example is, you know, bowling trophies. I can name, you know, any number of evangelicals who are uncomfortable, for example, by Catholic use of images. You shouldn't have that statue of Mary in the sanctuary because of the second commandment. And that, you know, that's very strongly held. But then, you know, you go and play in that guy's little league or, you know, go to work with him and he gets, you know, he gets some little statue for, you know, most valuable player in the, you know, the office little league. No, not a second thought given to it. Here's another graven image sitting atop a little plinth, you know, that says most valuable player for the, you know, for the office softball league, and nobody cares. And what you discover, of course, is that it's only religious-y things that are portrayed with imagery that cause a problem. It's not right. all images, you know, you don't see, there's no move by the local evangelical church to, you know, go down to the park and tear down the statue of Woodrow Wilson or whoever, right. you know, Abraham Lincoln. We must go to the Lincoln Memorial and we must, you know, smash that idolatrous thing that sits in that seat there. That never happens.
No, and yet, right, that's following the iconoclast, you know, like John Calvin.
Mm-hmm.
They're following a human tradition that, like you said, it's done just like that with religious imagery.
Right.
And it's the same thing with, you know, they say, oh, look at that Catholic kneeling in front of a statue of Mary. He must be worshiping her, or even worse, he's worshiping a statue.
Right.
Yet that same evangelical guy goes down on one knee to propose marriage to his fiancée.
Mm-hmm.
No one, of course, thinks he's worshiping his fiancée.
Right. You know,
instead, this is a posture of humility, of service, of love.
Right.
You know, right. That's being offered, and so
sure.
there's a disconnect. It's like no. that person must be worshiping, a statue or worshiping Mary, which we, of course, say, nope, the Catholic Church condemns that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of those misconceptions. And there are a lot of those that we have to clear up. You have to be ready as a Catholic to clear those up with your Protestant friend.
Well, and one of the curious things, of course, now these days is exactly the people who historically were terribly worried about Catholic use of imagery are now the people who are terribly worried that department stores don't have little creche scenes at Christmas time. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so wait, now we're demanding statues and religious ones?
Right. The one time of the year it's okay for a Protestant to have a statue is during Christmas.
Yes, as Patrick Madrid said, the great thing about being Catholic is not only do we get to worship statues, but our statues worship statues as well. Well, we're up against the break here. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Mr. Devin Rose talking about his book, Navigating the Tiber, and his other book, The Protestant's Dilemma. And we'll be back right after this.
If you enjoy listening to Mark Shea and all of his wonderful co-hosts here on Connecting the Dots, then consider becoming a friend of the show and provide your support today. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show. Thank you.
Hi there. Yours welcome to the B. We are back on the air with Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today to talk with Devin Rose about his two books, really, The Protestant's Dilemma, but also especially his newest book, Navigating the Tiber, which is a guidebook for how Catholics can lead their Protestant friends into full communion with the Church. And we've talked a little bit about making the case for sacred tradition, because that's really kind of the central trunk, if you will, of the tree. That's where the tree splits, is at the trunk, into those folks who look to Scripture as the sole source of revelation, etc., and the Catholic tradition, which looks to sacred tradition, both in written and unwritten form, and interpreted for us with the help of the magisterium, that is the teaching office of the Church, those bishops who are the successors of the apostles, to whom Jesus said, "He who listens to you listens to me, and he who listens to me listens to him who sent me." That's the Catholic approach to revelation is, tradition, both written and unwritten, and with the guidance of the magisterium leading us through the Church's tradition. And so it comes back to this, question of sacred tradition is, can you trust it? And bringing evangelicals along to the point where... What I tried to do, and by what authority, was argue not so much that Catholics believe in sacred tradition and evangelicals don't, as to say that Catholics believe in sacred tradition and know that they do, and evangelicals believe in sacred tradition and don't know that they do.
Which is a riff off the G.K. Chesterton quote. Which you've heard that quote, right?
Refresh my memory, which quote?
Well, you being the Chesterton quotation master, Chesterton said there's two types of people in the world, those who believe in dogma and know it, and those who believe in dogma and don't know it.
Ah, well, okay. Very true. Very true.
You've been so steeped in Chesterton that your own quotes are organic growths out of his.
It's
true.
That's pretty good. So what do you do? as we've been talking, I mean, you made clear that it's very important, to, especially early on, to keep the focus on sacred tradition, because that's really what it comes back to. You've mentioned a couple of times the idea of a leaf issue. Could you articulate what you mean by that?
Yeah. Something like, let's say we're going to debate between a Catholic and Protestant, can a Christian lose their salvation? Hmm. Well, when we examine that, what's the definition of a Christian? Mm-hmm. Ah, well, if you're talking, let's say, to a Calvinist Protestant, the definition of a Christian is one who is, God has elected to be justified, and who he's elected them to persevere to the end. And so by definition, a Calvinist definition, a Christian can't lose their salvation. What is salvation? Well, depending on who you talk to, it's justification along with sanctification. Is justification through faith alone? Is it our works involved? What's the role of love in there? Mm-hmm. How do we know that? Well, we know that by what we accept as divine revelation. Well, okay, is divine revelation scriptures? If so, which books make up the scriptures? Does it also include a tradition, which might not be encoded in the scriptures themselves?
Mm-hmm.
That's lived out in the church's liturgy, through apostolic succession.
Right.
So, in other words, we're going from a leaf issue down the branch toward the trunk of the tree, all the way to the trunk of the tree to the root.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from that. Right. It's from the root then is where the real difference in the Protestant versus Catholic paradigm is found.
Yeah.
And if we're going to go on that, to spend hours and hours debating a leaf issue, we shouldn't be surprised when we don't make much progress. We might make some progress.
Yeah.
But we might just sit there for 2 hours arguing verse interpretations back and forth.
One of the things that I've come to realize in a lot of ways, and you may have noticed this as well, is that Robert Benchley once said that there were two kinds of people in the world, those who divide the world into two kinds of people and those who don't. And I divide the world into two kinds of people, those who ask questions in order to find things out, and those who ask questions in order to keep from finding things out. And we've all known people like my kids were like this when they were little, right? They had a sudden intense need to know about so many things right at bedtime. Dad, why is the sky blue? So you'd answer the question, and while you're answering the question, you can see from the faraway look on their face that they're not listening because they're trying to think of the next question to ask in order to stave off the inevitable.
Yeah.
And you see that same process at work in some Protestant Catholic discussions. So there are people who ask questions because they really want to know the answer. What are Catholics up to when they're lighting a candle in front of a statue? And when you tell them, their response is, oh, thank you. Okay, now I get it. Whereas there are also people, and if they give you an answer like that, generally what happens is because they're satisfied, they're willing to listen to you when you then connect the leaf of the candle burning in front of the statue to the branch and take it back to the root. And so the Catholic will say that we do this because we venerate the saints. And the reason we venerate the saints is because they are in the image and likeness of God, and because the Holy Spirit is in them, they become icons themselves of Jesus, the Word made flesh. And so you can follow the logic of Catholic teaching right back to the root, right back to the trunk and then down to the root. And what I find is people who are not asking questions in order to find things out never pursue the branch and always hop from leaf to leaf. So why are you lighting the candle in front of the statue? Well, here's the answer. Well, okay, but what about the Crusades?
Right.
So you try and answer the question about the Crusades, and, oh, well, what about gay marriage? How come this? Why not that? You know, and there's never an interest in the answer because the real goal is to accuse.
And that's why whenever you're choosing to have a discussion with a Protestant, you have to consider whether or not this person is truly interested in a discussion that could lead to the truth, could lead to a changing of their mind,
right?
Or not. And they might not be. They might be that hard ground, so to speak, in this right. respect. And you got to say, I'm not gonna sit here and have this argument with you, because I can tell it's not gonna go anywhere.
Except in one circumstance, and you just named it. I knew perfectly well, talking to James White, that nothing I said was ever going to change James White's mind. But I also knew perfectly well that there were a bunch of people, one of them turned out to be you, watching that discussion. And for their sake, you can have a conversation with somebody who is adamantly unwilling to listen to reason, because other people will listen to reason. So that's just something I throw out there.
No, it's a good point. And I, a little background, I was watching, I was a lurker in a discussion Mark Shea and James White had online. This is like 18 years ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
But it was, you were two of the first apologists on each side who were discussing these things. Mm-hmm. When the internet was young and new and fresh. And I was hoping James White was going to come to the defense of Protestantism and help me remain Protestant. And instead I saw him duck away from the toughest questions. And I thought, oh no, I had a bad feeling in my stomach that there might not be a good answer to these questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's one of the fascinating things that the internet allows us to do, is have these discussions with an audience who can see what's going on. I got friends in New Zealand who became Catholic as a result of watching internet discussions a couple of years before you came online and joined that crowd. But isn't that fascinating? So, excuse me, what do you do, when people bring up things like the Crusades and the Inquisition? How do you respond to that?
Well, Mark, you're throwing me some softballs, because believe it or not, in Navigating the Tiber, to cover these bases, I have chapters on Pope, Mary, Crusades, Inquisition, because they inevitably come up in certain discussions with Protestants.
Mm-hmm.
And so I give you the basically the 2-page, 3-page explainer for the Crusades, okay, for the Inquisition, because, as you know, they just throw that out there. They don't know anything about the Crusades or right. the Inquisition. It's all Monty Python and secular propaganda. It really is. You just scratch the surface a little bit, and you realize, you know even less than I do about the Crusades.
Uh-huh.
So I talk about those in the book as well, so that you can be ready to defend it.
Okay, interesting. You know, one of the things that's rats, we're out of time. Well, we'll have you back at some point. I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. You've been listening to Connecting the Dots. My special guest today was Mr. Devin Rose, the author of The Protestant's Dilemma and Navigating the Tiber, both of which you can find at Catholic.com or Amazon.com. Our producer today was Danny Head, and I will be back tomorrow with Mr. Rod Bennett. Until then, have a grand evening. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.